This is a Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 12, where we will answer some listener questions.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Kicking off 2014 with a new episode. How are you doing, CJ?
Very well, thank you. Very well.
It's been a little while since we've recorded a show. I guess it's been roughly a month since we released one. Our promise to everyone that subscribes to the show is that we will have a really regular cadence. And I know we dropped the ball over the last few weeks, but I think it's all with holidays and everything. With you were on vacation for a week, and then there was the Christmas vacation for both of us, and then last week I was pretty sick and I had no voice for the better part of a week. So we lost 3 weeks, but we're picking it up here the first full week of January 2014. So we'll have another episode starting off the year pretty strong.
Yeah, time flies, huh? I can't believe it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I know it's been 3 weeks here. So without trying to give everybody a complete rundown of our last 3 weeks, what have you been up to lately?
So over the break, took things pretty easy, really. Tried not to work too hard. But one interesting thing I've been is sort of more on a non-work related topic is, you know that I'm into space stuff. And I've been playing this little game called the Kerbal Space Program. I don't know if you've heard of that.
I haven't.
It's a game that you can get on Steam or buy directly from their website. It's called Kerbal Space Program. And it's basically a space sim, your space program. And you've got to build rockets and get them into orbit around various planets and moons and around planets. And the thing about it is it's kind of cartoony. Like, the people in it are not humans. They're little alien Kerbals, they're called. But the physics of the thing are fairly realistic. And by that I mean, like, you've got to know a little bit about orbital physics in order to get into orbit. It's not push a button and you're in orbit. You've actually got to figure out your rocket loads and your delta V requirements and your staging of your rockets and how to put this thing into, you know, various types of orbits and inclinations and altitudes and apoapsis and periapsis and all of these kinds of things. And so there's quite a lot of depth to the game.
Wow.
And it's only in beta right now, so it's not a complete finished game, but there's a big community behind it, and it's really geeky, which is what I really like about it. And you can play a sandbox mode, which is just like free-for-all, or you can play in career mode, which is kind of like more of a progression. But there's no story. It's an open sort of game. You can do whatever you want. So, I don't know, that's really tweaking my space aficionado buttons right now.
Very cool.
Especially with all the rocket launches going off and around the world we've had. India's put up a lunar rover or something along those lines, or maybe just a satellite, or China has a lunar rover right now, or it's one of the two.
Mm-hmm.
There's been rocket launches from SpaceX and other ones up from over here, so there's a lot going on in that area right now.
Yeah, you say the rocket launches. I mean, I can see, not to pull a Sarah Palin, I can see Russia from my backyard thing, but I can. It's pretty cool that when SpaceX launches a rocket from Cape Canaveral in Florida, I can walk onto my driveway and I'm 142 miles away from the launch pad, and I can see it streak across the sky. So it's pretty cool seeing it go up. I've got a new lens on my, or I've a lens on my camera I got last year that I've been playing with a lot more lately, and I was able to, I can actually figure out how I can get the zoom set up and the quality of the exposure set up to where I can shoot a shot after the rocket has already taken off. I haven't gone through and figured out what the time duration was of how long it's been up how long it's been off the pad, so how far downrange it actually is, but we can actually see the separation of the first and second stage, and we can actually see the rocket on the other end of the flame trail from with the naked eye, and then also with zooming in and stuff. So it's been really cool. My neighbors are kind of like going, "Let's go see the Rocket Man." I'm like, "I'm not a Rocket Man. I've watched them, but and it's cool with their cadence. I mean, they got this great contract with NASA to where, or with all these other companies, I think to knock off about 40 launches, and they're shooting them off almost one a month.
I think there's supposed to be one today, an Antares rocket, I think.
Yeah, they shot one off 2 days ago or 3 days ago, and I didn't notice it until 4 minutes after they launched. So he was...
Oh, yeah, that was the Falcon 9 from SpaceX.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I walked out and saw... I could see the contrail going. I could see the exhaust trail, but I couldn't see the rocket, but...
I tell you what, like, I came down to Florida for the STS-135 last shuttle launch, and it was one of the most... It's as close to religion as I'm ever going to get. Like, I'm not a religious guy, but that thing was watching that engineering feat was pretty mind blowing. So
I'm right there with you. I went down there and saw Discovery's last flight. I saw the launch for that one, and I've seen multiple launches down there. And it's just, you see it, and even watching these rockets launch on. Watching it on the webcast feed from SpaceX and then walking outside and seeing it and knowing it's downrange.
Yeah.
It puts things in perspective to where it's like, it's amazing that we're able to do that. And then you turn around and someone's like, there's just something. I just can't get this one little bug to get. I can't resolve this one little bug. I'm like, you're out of your freaking, really? Look what these guys have figured out.
Yeah. Humans can do some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
And I think, that's putting, glossing over it, but yeah, we do some pretty cool things, and getting things and people into space has got to be one of the most amazing achievements.
Yep.
Anywho, cloudy stuff. I mean, rockets go through clouds. I guess it's vaguely related. But what have you been up to?
So I guess the last few weeks it's been really busy. I guess I was working on a class for Pluralsight. I wrapped up that advanced class, and so it's in the production and transcoding mode with Pluralsight right now. We're making a few little edits because what I called my money module came out to be a bit more full of content than I anticipated. but I've got like almost nearly 3 hours of content on working with web services and workflows in SharePoint, authenticated, anonymous, third party, OAuth authenticated, how to create a web service, secure it. So yeah. I'll have more information about that as when it's going to be available and what's in that module on my blog if people want to watch that. Just andrewconnell.com. And then I have
the widely anticipated advanced workflow course. I've seen a bit of banter on Twitter about this, and there's a few people wanting to see it. So
yeah, it's been a long time coming. I'm finally getting it out the door, but
it's a lot of work.
It's a lot.
Good job on getting it submitted.
Yeah, thank you. And then I guess aside from that, it's just been kind of, I took 2 weeks off. Once that was done, I was like, I'm checking out. So I got nothing done for 2 weeks. And aside from that, this week's been cleanup week before I start working on two more projects next week. So working on our little startup curb in earnest next week. And then also working on another Pluralsight course that I've got green light for, but I'll hold off and not speak of it to create vaporware until we have better ideas. That one's goal is to be published before the SharePoint conference in early March because there's a tie-in to it, but I'll hold back on exactly what it is until we get closer.
Ooh, I love a good secret.
It's not a secret. I just don't want people going like, oh, add this. And when's it coming? It's like, it's coming. Yeah, so in this episode, what we want to do is we want to answer a handful of questions that we have. There's been a bunch of cloud news that's come out over the last 3 weeks, but... And we'd be here for 3 hours if we tried to cover it all. So let's do some questions, kind of reset the mode for 2014, and see what some of the listener questions have in store for us. How does that sound?
No, that sounds really good. We've had, just to reiterate, if you have questions yourself, you can go on to the website, microsoftcloudshow.com, and go submit your question.
Yep.
So we'd love to hear from you.
Yep. So I echo that as well. So we got a handful of questions here we're going to answer today. We're going to try and keep them fairly short and sweet. Some of them we have some people submitted the audio recordings for, so we'll play those as we get them. And that's definitely preferred over people just emailing them in, but we'll take what we can get. So our first question here is by a friend of ours named Eric Shupps. So let me go ahead and play his question, and then we'll take a stab at it.
What's the best way to migrate an existing set of development virtual machines for SharePoint and Office applications into Azure? Are there tools to help prepare those virtual machine environments? Are there any recommendations on the best way to move those from a local environment up into the cloud? And how do you deal with the virtual networking issues of connecting those VMs together?
All right. Well, great question there, Eric Schopps. I really appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with Eric or follow him, we'll have his contact information in our show notes and how you can follow him on Twitter and his blog and such. So, CJ, what would you say is your take on the best way to migrate existing development environments to Azure?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things that spring to mind when you're talking about moving VMs just in general to a cloud environment like Azure. Probably the ones that spring to mind immediately are things like moving an existing VM or imaging an existing machine and getting it up into the cloud probably wouldn't be my primary focus or recommendation. I would say you're probably better building up a fresh VM up in Azure and creating a new image up there in a specific way. And the reason I say that is because if you're working in a development team or a bunch of people that want to use a copy of that VM, you've got a few things you've got to consider, like the networking between them. You can't just copy paste VMs and expect everything to work when they've got the same machine name and various SIDs or security identifiers and things like that. So there's a couple. It's a little deeper than just sort of copying a machine and then replicating it a bunch of times. So what I recommend people do is start from fresh and build up a development VM image where you build up Windows, you put your tools on it, you get it all into the state you want it in, up to a certain point. And if you're talking about SharePoint VMs, that point may not include going through the whole PS config system or part of the puzzle. And that's really you lay down the SharePoint bits and you stop there. And the reason I say that is because then once you go past the PS config sort of gate, then you're starting to limit yourselves about how many times you can, what you can do with that VM and replicate it to a bunch of different developers and have them all still on the same network and work well together. So that's kind of the first point. The second point is you got to think about Active Directory and are you going to be connecting these machines to an AD box that's running in Azure or back to a corporate AD box on-prem? And I definitely recommend connecting it to a corporate AD box on-prem and then using something like the point-to-site or site-to-site VPN technology that Azure provides so that it makes it way easier to work with those VMs. Developers can just log into them with their regular AD credentials, things like that. They could still get access to stuff on-prem or in the cloud. It makes it a lot easier working with it. But those sorts of decisions will depend and vary a lot based on somebody's requirements. But in a nutshell, I definitely recommend that people look at building up a fresh VM for the cloud rather than trying to move an existing one just because of the baggage that comes with.
Yeah, I'm gonna echo that as well. I mean, I don't think that, I mean, specifically Eric's question was asking about migrating an existing development environment. I'm not a fan of doing that myself. I'm more of a fan of, especially if you're moving up into Azure, things are just going to be cleaner. You're not going to have, even though we have virtual machines, are supposed to have all the hardware virtualized. There's still some stuff that's just going to trickle through. I would much prefer to build out my environments in the cloud first and have that be my masters and work from there. If I do have a lot of data that I do need to copy up to my environments, either tools that I use or that I can't exactly download or whatever, big content databases I want to attach if I'm talking about SharePoint VMs, and I don't want to go through the process of uploading all that stuff, there is an option that Windows Azure does provide, which is being able to create like a VHD, copy that stuff onto that VHD, and then FedExing the VHD to Azure, and then they'll add that VHD to your storage blob, so you don't have to go through the process of uploading you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 gigs of information. You could just let it, let them copy it over. You could mount that and then you could move data around as you want. Just use it as a temporary deployment vehicle.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah.
And then I guess it also kind of depends on how you want to set everything up using either a single VM or multiple VMs. So I'm actually in the process of, due to some laptop hardware changes I had to make at the end of last year, I'm in the process of standing up a multi-server SharePoint farm in Azure right now, and decided that I was just, again, I was going to do everything in Azure and start with Azure. So hopefully that answers your question, Eric. So the next question we want to go into is actually we've gotten two questions from two people that are very similar. So first, we have a question here submitted by Paul Schaeflein. Again, we'll have his contact information in the show notes. So let me go ahead and play his question first.
This is Paul Schaeflein from Chicago, Illinois. I can be found on the internet at www.schaeflein.net or on Twitter at Paul Schaeflein. I'm a longtime listener, but a first-time caller. I can't wait to hear myself on the radio. Sandbox Solutions and SharePoint 2010 were the first attempt at getting safer code inside a SharePoint environment, and the app model in SharePoint 2013 is clearly the second generation of this approach. My question is, do you think that the app models will just be tweaked and improved, or will there be a third generation and something entirely new going forward?
Okay, and so another question we had submitted was by someone named Tobias Zimmergren. He's over in Sweden, and his question, he submitted it via text, and so it says, what is the future for SharePoint in the cloud? Honestly, are apps the way for the future, or are they just a viable option for organizations? Will we be able to stay on-prem for our enterprise-class customers that we have been dedicating the five-plus years to helping out doing farm solutions on-prem? So in my mind, both these questions kind of are related, so we're going to tackle them as just one answer. So what's your take on this here, CJ? I'll let you go first.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we have a little more time.
I think so. That was kind of a little shorter than you were expecting.
Okay, yes.
So here's the short answer from me, right? I'm pretty straightforward on, at least I think I'm fairly straightforward on this. People are throwing their arms up in the air and crying that, you know, Microsoft is changing the whole world. To me, the world's not changing all that much, especially, you know, when it comes to SharePoint development. On-prem will be on-prem for some time to come. Microsoft have a history of not dropping the ball and running away from what people have currently done or have done on-prem historically. They strongly value backwards compatibility in comparison to a lot of other companies, at least anyway. And so I firmly believe that SharePoint on-prem solutions will continue to be supported for some time to come, and at least another, you know, 5 to 8 years, right? I mean, mainstream support from Microsoft just for SharePoint 2013, I think it's like an eight-year thing, right? So they have to support on-prem customers for that long, regardless. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to necessarily do new investments into new ways of developing stuff for on-prem. And that's where I think over time we'll start seeing this new development model of what people call the cloud app model or the app model develop further. And I believe strongly that that is the future. Whether it's viable for everybody today is a completely separate question. But over time, we're going to see that get better and better and better and better and more applicable in more scenarios. And so whether it's, if it's not applicable to you today or you can't do what you want to do today, that's fine. Do it the way you'd currently do it on-prem and wait till the app model catches up for you. And further down the line, it might be more applicable to you. But I certainly wouldn't just discount it because it doesn't do what you want to do it today. I'd definitely look at it. Keep looking at it again and again, and eventually I think things will come right for you.
I'm going to fully agree with what you just said. I mean, I think that apps are definitely the way going forward. Like you said, the problem today is that we aren't at complete feature parity in apps that we are in with solutions. But to answer one part of the question, yes, I do think that we'll be able to stay on-prem, as you say it, Tobias, with enterprise-class customers using farm and sandbox solutions for the time being, as well as using apps. But I do think the way of the future is apps. I think that, you know, like what you said, we see a lot of people get really frustrated by the change that's happening and such. You know, this seems very familiar to an interview that I saw with Jeff Bezos, CEO of Amazon, recently on a show where someone asked him about how do you feel about Amazon kind of affecting or in a negative way small businesses or standard retail stores, and you know, how do you feel like Amazon innovating and kind of innovating them away? And his answer, I thought, was really, really applicable and similar to this, which is, I'm going to paraphrase it, but he basically said, it's not Amazon that's doing this. It's the future that is actually going through and making these changes. You see so many different platforms that are moving in this direction where you're not making changes on the specific platform. You know, we're not building apps that integrate in with our iPhones and Android phones and Windows phones and Windows operating systems. Instead, we're building apps that are going to use services provided by those different platforms to make the platforms more reliable and more stable. And then if we don't have the hooks that we need, then those are feature requests to get access to those kinds of things on those different platforms. That's where we are today with apps and SharePoint and Office 365. I think we'll get there. It's just going to take a little bit more time. This is just V1. So we're 2 months away from finding out, you know, what new stuff is going to be coming. Well, hopefully we're 2 months away from finding out what new stuff is coming at the SharePoint conference as far as SharePoint's concerned. So,
I think you're 100% right. You know, what I think we'll be saying in 5 years' time is if Microsoft hadn't started investing in a new model that they have, like they have with their new app model, that SharePoint would be dying off like notes.
Mm-hmm.
They need a new model at some point down the line. And if they don't start doing that now, it's going to be too late.
Yep.
And so if it hadn't come along and if it was just advancing, you know, full trust or farm solutions, that that would be end up boxing themselves in a corner down the track. So although painful for some, it's definitely the way of the future, and things will hopefully get a lot better.
Yep, agreed. So we got another question here from Paul Schaeflein, that he also submitted as an audio question. So let me go ahead and play this. And this one's really going to be for you, CJ, and not for me, because I don't have as much experience with this.
I'm wondering if you have any client experience or opinions of your own about how best to handle identity with a cloud or a hybrid environment. Do you see customers migrating all the way to a cloud identity, or is it more of a replication from an on-premises directory into the cloud?
Okay, so identity. What say you about identity in the cloud and 365 and blah, blah, blah?
This is a very interesting topic. And the reason I say that is because of hybrid, right? And we all know that traditionally in the past, in a Microsoft environment on-prem, AD has ruled the roost for some time. I mean, it's ludicrous amounts of market share and penetration into large, medium and enterprise customers. And so with the push to the cloud, identity is usually the number one stumbling block, right? It's usually the first big hurdle you've got to overcome. Just even things like publishing, building a line of business system and deploying it into the cloud. Your staff need to be able to use it. And so how do they use it? The first thing they've got to be able to do is authenticate and authorize with that system. And so identity is usually the first thing that happens or that needs to be solved whenever you want to do anything in the cloud, whether it be purely in the cloud or a hybrid. And so it's a very, very hot topic right now. And the reason I say this is really interesting is, especially for Microsoft, they're in a very good position right now. Active Directory, like I said, is huge on-prem, and Microsoft have everything to lose here. If they don't get it right in the cloud, it's ripe for somebody else coming in and cutting their lunch. But they're making all the right moves. So it's not a perfect story today, but it's incrementally getting better and better. If you've got an Office 365 tenancy, for example, there's an Azure AD tenant behind the scenes, which is where your DIR sync, you know, your user accounts get synced up to. And so accounts get created up in Azure Active Directory. Office 365 will authenticate against that, and you're good to go. The next logical step, which currently doesn't work is just being able to use Azure AD as your AD. And currently that's not the case. So you still have to have an on-prem Active Directory. If you want systems on-prem to also use that, you can't just join servers up to Azure AD right now. But that seems like the next logical step to me, is to be able to get rid of those Active Directory systems on-prem and move them purely to the cloud. So right now, it's very much a augmentation of the on-prem story, and it's not possible to do 100% cloud identity, as far as I'm aware, or in my understanding. But over time, I think that's the next logical step. So right now, it's great for things like there's a pretty good story with on-prem AD plus ADFS, or Active Directory Federation Services, I believe, on the edge for authenticating external or other systems to your on-prem AD, and then also being able to sync up those user accounts and profiles and stuff up into Azure and use them for other custom systems you build in the cloud, or things like that. So the story is getting better and better from Microsoft on this, and it's going to be really fascinating to watch and see how it plays out. But they're very well poised to do well on this, and they're making the right moves.
Yeah, I agree. They definitely are moving in the right direction here. And I like, this is kind of one of the places where we see, you know, the Azure guys really leading in the forefront, and Office 365 being able to heavily leverage this and being one of the biggest first customers for this. I think that that's one of the areas where we're going to see probably the most forward leading adoption of new, latest and greatest stuff on the 365 side. So
yeah, like Azure AD Premium, I believe, has been, we should talk about this in a news episode, but in a nutshell, there are all these other services that Microsoft are working with, you know, third-party services, other SaaS products that are going to start integrating with it. Because they, like, take Box, for example, right? Box is a good competitor to SharePoint. Well, some would say it's good. I don't necessarily think that, but it's a good competitor. There you go. And I think they even got up on stage with Scott Goo when he was talking about Azure AD. But services like that want Microsoft's hook into the enterprise identity story. Because right now, it's tough for those third-party services to go sell themselves to really large enterprises and say, oh yeah, but everybody's got a separate username and password. They need Microsoft to get them hooked into the enterprise identity story. And they do that with, you know, federated authentication and things like that. And Microsoft are pretty critical to that puzzle. So it's going to be interesting. Like Salesforce and Box and all those kinds of services hooking into the same identity that you use to sign into your corporate machine on-prem with, that's pretty compelling.
Agreed, yeah. Okay, so let's do another question from Paul. Like Paul's questions, because he submitted them as audio clips, and it's nice to hear the person, I guess. So
yeah.
Let me go ahead and play this one, and then I think that we'll go ahead and give our thoughts on it.
The rapid cadence of updates in Office 365 are much different than many organizations have dealt with in the past. Do you have any strategies or tips to help these organizations adjust to this new cadence?
Okay, so rapid cadence of updates in Office 365. How about you take a first stab at this one?
Yeah, again, this is another one that hopefully I can sum it up as simply as it is in my head. We're going to have to get used to a rapid release cadence. But on the flip side, Microsoft have to start doing a much better job of the communications and messaging and the way they currently handle it in 365. And that other providers are doing a much better job of this right now. I look forward to a much faster release cadence, but I caveat with that with only if Microsoft do their job and give us the info up front and give us some warning and give us the ability to opt in and out, or at least delay things a little bit. We've talked about this on the show a little bit before, but I think with a few simple, what feels like simple to customers at least, simple improvements from Microsoft, I think this story will get a lot better in 365.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you for the most part here. I don't have any special kind of strategies or tips on how you would adjust to this new cadence. I'm personally still working through things, but let me kind of just give you some ideas. I'm going to echo first what you say about Microsoft needing to do a lot of work to provide some confidence with customers in this area. It's not just them, like you said, being upfront and communicating and telling us what is changing and when will it change. But it's also giving us the ability to make sure that they're not breaking stuff with new things. And when I say breaking, I don't mean that Microsoft dropped the ball. They broke something in the API. Some developer didn't know what he was doing. And now my app is broken. I mean more that things changed in the way I wrote my app. Because things changed, it doesn't apply anymore for what I was doing. And so now my app is broken because of some potential improvements or advancements or whatever with the API. Let me draw a little parallel here. And this is what I would like to see Microsoft do. I think that the best way to deal with this, first, as in a macro level, this problem is not just a Microsoft problem or is a specific unique problem to Office 365. This is something that the good thing here, I love these kind of problems because these are things that other companies, other issues that other companies are having. Some of them have solved them in different ways. And because Microsoft is starting to have these problems with 365, or I guess has had these problems, but they're really on the front end of this, is that they can look at what other people have done and they can adopt some of their strategies. So I would suggest, or I would submit, that the one that I would like to see is that if we follow the guidance of what other platform users are using. Let's take Salesforce, for example. I like the way they do this. Now, admittedly, I've not done a tremendous amount of Salesforce work, but in the work that I've done with their API, their REST API, I really like the way they've done it. What they do is that in the URL, they do releases on a quarterly basis. They make changes to their APIs frequently, but they make big feature updates on a quarterly release. What they do is within the URL of the REST call that you're making back to Salesforce, you actually have the version number that's of the REST API that you're going to be using. So for instance, I showed in one of the demos in my soon to release Pluralsight, you know, workflow advanced class where I interact with the Salesforce API. I can't remember the exact version I used, but I was interacting with version 22 or 23 of the query API that they had. And they just increment the number. It's just like in the URL, it's something or API slash V23.0 or V23 slash query. And what I like about that is that when they go through and they make new changes, I don't have to change my code to use the new stuff that they did and change the way that they've gone through. They made certain changes to their API. Their old stuff continues to work. And if they have bug fixes or whatever, then they increment those version numbers, like real versions that we have, like 22.1 or 22.2. And I can go modify my code to take advantage of the bug fix. But it's not that, oh, the bug got changed, the bug got fixed, everything is now working in SharePoint now. You know, I should be responsible. I should be able to let my code and my workaround that I had for version 22 should continue to work, even though that thing has been patched. And then I can update my code to use a later version. That's what I like to see them do, because that would really insulate me from any of the changes they make, as long as the things in the API continue to work. That requires a lot of good regression testing and stuff, but it's just standard software development stuff. And so it should not be hard for a company like Microsoft that builds software to do these kinds of things. This is just what you have to deal with in the services model.
Yeah, Azure does a similar thing, except they don't put the version number in the URL. They put effectively a version, but it's a date that the API changed. They put it in an HTTP header instead. So your URL for a particular endpoint would stay the same, but then you basically say in the header, I want API version, 2013 or 2014, 1.8 or something like that, right?
That's actually
date that the API changed.
Yeah, I prefer that approach. I don't like them using the date. I'd rather use a version number to kind of clean up
Me
a little
too,
bit.
Yeah.
But I like using the HTTP header a hell of a lot more, because the endpoint shouldn't change. What should change is the directive of what I'm doing. If I'm authenticating or I'm saying I'm looking for this specific version or whatever, that stuff that goes in the header. But yeah, so.
Yeah.
Different ways to skin the cat. Microsoft have things that they need to figure out or what they're going to do. Maybe they've already figured it out and they're just implementing it. Or we'll just have to wait around and see when they get to this.
Yeah. As a side note to this, there have been some cases where they've broken some APIs in 365 that some of our friends have found out about and have noticed. And I don't think it's necessarily, it wasn't necessarily a matter of they didn't have a good versioning strategy. I think they just broke it by accident. Mm-hmm. And they didn't really mean to put in a regression, which is unfortunate, which means, you know, they need better test strategies for that to make sure they don't break things. But it will be interesting to see how they handle the whole versioning problem as we move forward and add new capabilities to the APIs. Yep.
Okay, so we have let's move on to another question. It's a relatively short question here, but we got one from Victor Whelan, who's also from Sweden. So let me go ahead and play Victor's question. I love this question.
Hi, guys. This is Victor Whelan from Sweden. How are you doing? Really like the new show you put on. I have one question that I've been pondering a bit about, and it's about the user interface in Office 365 and SharePoint Online. There's no mention of SharePoint in the user interface, and there's no mention of Exchange either. It's called Sites, it's called Newsfeed, it's called People, it's called Calendar. The only two products mentioned are Outlook and Yammer. Why do you think that is so? Cheers.
All right. So I think that's a really interesting observation. So do you want to take a first stab at this one, and then I'll follow up with my take?
Yeah, you know, when we saw this, or when Victor submitted this question, and I listened to it, and I stopped and thought about it, and I'd never really thought about this before. I mean, I'd never really thought about the fact that there isn't a little label in 365, like when you log in, that says SharePoint up the top. And it kind of struck me because I hadn't really sat back and gone, oh yeah, I sort of expected SharePoint to be in the top. But like he says, there is Yammer, and there is Outlook, but there's no SharePoint. It just says Sites, I believe, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
So that's kind of interesting. And I could have got two thoughts on this. One is for it and one is against it. Against it, I'll start with. So against it, I think it was kind of confusing the first time people log in because they say, I want to go see stuff in my SharePoint sites, right? And sites to people, just the word sites to people means different things. So is that like other people's websites, or is it SharePoint sites, or is it something else? So there's that. And then that, I think that would be a little confusing. On the flip side, I'm kind of a person of the belief that thinks that we should be showing people what they want to do, not brand names and product names. So like, I personally think that'd be way better putting another word other than sites up there. Something like, you know, like projects or teams or documents or something like that, right? That's a little bit more descriptive, or have it change, right? Or have it configurable to what makes sense to people. I don't think sites makes a whole bunch of sense. Outlook definitely makes sense. Although it's a brand name, people are very, very tightly associated with Outlook, so I don't think that's quite as bad in this case. Like, just putting mail up there would probably might not be quite as associative as the word Outlook. So Yammer, I think that's a whole different kettle of fish. We'll see if that lives on. But I think that's just a temporary thing until all of the social capabilities get baked into all of the experiences throughout the stack, and eventually that should disappear. But the I definitely would have preferred to see something like, you know, teams or projects, or teams and projects and intranet and something or other being along the top, or some sort of nav that makes that a whole bunch more meaningful to people.
I agree with you on that. I think that generally we're going to see, first of all, the reason I think that, to answer Victor's question, why do I think it's so that we don't say SharePoint or Exchange in the navigation, is that I think that we're going to see these brands, and this is part of our prediction, one of my predictions, I guess, for 2014 in our prediction episode, is that I think we're going to see these brands diminish over time as Microsoft wants us to think more about Office 365 and not just a specific product within the 365 brands. The part that just drives me batty is the inconsistency of Microsoft. And it's just, it seems like this is just pervasive across the company. The one thing that they're consistent on is the inconsistent piece. Because you've got, you know, Exchange and SharePoint are gone, but Yammer and Outlook are still there. So SharePoint Exchange are like old school brands, Exchange being more old school than SharePoint. Yammer is new school, but Outlook is old school. So it's like there's no kind of consistency here. I love what you just said about saying, let's talk about what we're doing. I don't want Outlook in my navigation at the top. I can't tell how many times I go to 365 and I get confused where I want to see my calendar or my tasks or my email. And I have to remember, oh yeah, I'm going to Outlook and then I go to my calendar or something. And it's confusing to me. I like the idea. Let's do mail. Let's do calendar. Let's do tasks. Let's do teams. Let's do projects. Let's do conversations or something like that for Yammer or whatever. But let's be more consistent. But the other part, too, that I think is going to be a big challenge with this is that I want to see how this is going to translate to the on-prem guys, because you're not going, or at least as far as we can tell, we're not going to see somebody buying an Office 365 package and installing it on-prem, right? Because 365 is a brand that has a bunch of things on top of it, but under the covers, it's Link, it's Exchange, it's SharePoint, it's Yammer, but you can't install Yammer. So Outlook really isn't even part of 365, although that's what they use for the email. So it's like, it's so confusing. And where are you going to get this on-prem where the experience of SharePoint on-prem and the experience of SharePoint and Office 365 in the cloud is going to become so different and so confusing that you're going to have this whole thing of, well, what instant messaging service are you using? Skype, Messenger, or Link? It's like, they're all from the same company. Well, we should have just one. So I don't know. We'll have to see what this goes.
There's one way to solve this, right? And that's get away from 365's web experience. And like, because today, right now, at Provoke, we use Exchange Online for all of our email. We have Link on-prem for Link. We have SharePoint on-prem and SharePoint in Office 365. And whether I have Exchange on-prem or in the cloud, I just use Outlook. Whether I have Link online or Link on-prem, I just use the Link client. It gets a little murkier with SharePoint because I'm so dependent on the web UI still. Mm-hmm. But if there was a good integrated client experience across all of the services, then I wouldn't need a web experience, right? My docs just sync down. I can do all the stuff I can do in SharePoint without necessarily having to open a web experience. Or the web experience is the same in both regards, right? But I get a unit, I get a single experience wherever the services happen to live. And I think Outlook have done a really good job of that. You don't know any different whether you're in the cloud or on-prem. Link is exactly the same. SharePoint's a little different. But I'm a big believer of that, right? People shouldn't necessarily know where the services live, or they shouldn't really care. No. They shouldn't have to do anything different. They just work with their, you know, do their work and do what they want to do, no matter where the services live. And I think that's the experience that should ultimately be being aimed for. Yep.
I'll throw one more thing out there before, to button up this conversation, or this question. And that's, I always take a step back and look at what the competition does. What is everybody else doing? What is Google doing in this space? What is Apple doing in this space? And you know, when you look at what Google calls their stuff, we have Gmail, for you know, Google Mail, we have Google Analytics, we have Calendar. There's your Google Calendar. You've got Google Drive, for the SkyDrive kind of equivalent of the host in the cloud. You look over at Apple, they have Mail, they have a calendar. They call it iMail or iCloud stuff, but they throw an I in front of everything, where Google throws either the name Google or G in front of it. But it's all basically very generic stuff. It's very generic names. There's no special fancy names for anything, unless it's something that is more of a specific thing to their platform, like a FaceTime or something like that. So I don't know. You know, is Microsoft looking at those guys and trying to follow those kind of names because that's what they see resonating with the consumer market? Or are they going their own way and figuring out their own way with this? You know, we don't know. We don't have vision into how they're thinking. But I think the big picture is one thing you said and one thing I said, which is customer really shouldn't care where the service is, where stuff is installed, and which was your point. And then my point was, I think that these brands diminish over time because they want us to think about it more as a service, and the service they want to call Office 365.
Oh, definitely. So, yeah. Like, I see no reason why server product names should show in the UI at all. It should be what makes sense to the users. And it's sort of more capability driven, right? They want their mail, or they want their team sites, you know, they want team information or project information, or they want to converse with other people or search or whatever. They don't care if it's, you know, like Domino behind the scenes, yeah. Right?
Well, they might.
That's the service. Yeah, well, they're definitely, okay, that's a bad example. That's too soon, yeah. Too soon. But yeah, they don't care about all those sorts of things in general. They just want to do their work and do their job, and so whatever makes sense to the users is what should be presented, obviously.
I agree. Well, cool. Well, we got through, let's see, what is that, 5 or 6 questions here in this episode. So thanks for the questions that were submitted. Again, if you got any questions, please feel free to submit them to us through our website or on Twitter or all the information's up on our website at themicrosoftcloudshow.com. We'll also love to get some reviews from you in iTunes, because 5-star reviews help us reach more of an audience and get more great questions in, and you know, show that this give us a reason to keep doing the show. I guess we like to have some good feedback from the audience members. So
yeah, it's fun to hear from people, right? So it gets me all amped up that people find the content interesting and have questions about it and things like that. So definitely keep that up.
And I'll throw out there too, if you got an idea for a show episode, hey, send it in to us. CJ and I've got a little list of looks at our list. I'm looking at right now. I see there's 3 backlog items that we want to touch on, but love to dive into some other things whenever anybody has any ideas. So please submit them in, not just SharePoint focused, not just 365. It's all about the cloud.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text. We'll record it as a WAV or an MP3 file and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for The Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can find us on Facebook searching for The Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.